And as he was sitting out on his journey, a man ran up and knelt before him and asked him, "Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus said to him, "Why do you call me good? No one is good except God alone. You know these are his words." But Jesus said to them, "Children, how difficult is it to enter the kingdom of God?"
Good evening. I was inspired to do this lesson by a very recent thing I ran across, and I was happy because I think Justin said the same thing this morning, and none of us want to be happy for the fact that Mitch is injured, but I'm happy to be able to do this because I really wanted to talk about this thing. It was on my heart, and I began to consume a lot of mental space for me, and so I can dump it out there for you. So this is very useful for me to get this off my chest. I went over several different titles for this lesson. I settled on Salvation Facebook Style, which is what's on the screen in front of you. But I've changed this slide probably 6 or 7 times. The original title is still on my notes here. It says, "Sorry to bother you." All of this will make a little more sense in just a moment. Before I get there, I should mention that I don't normally do PowerPoint slides, as you know. I did this set for the specific reason of the next slide that's up here. So the background of this lesson is I'm flicking the phone through Facebook, right? You know, those of you who've been on Facebook know how this goes. You hit the Facebook, and you're on the phone, flick, 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 and you go through all the, see if anything comes up that's interesting. There's some, you know, like on the baby pictures or whatever, and something goes by, posted by somebody on my feed, and I'm just shocked by it. It's just the most wrong thing that I think I've ever seen in my life. And I told Alina, I said, you know, I could preach on this one thing for 3 hours. It would be a 3-hour rant that none of you would probably want to listen to. And really, in a way, I'm kind of, I guess, preaching to the choir, if that's a term, you know, those of us who don't have choirs can use here. But you will all undoubtedly agree with this. But I think it's worthwhile to go through this type of thing as an exercise, because what I'm about to show you, to me, becomes, my initial emotion was, this is so bad. And then my secondary emotion was that it's so bad that it reflects out of itself. If you do the opposite of everything in it, you will end up in the right place, which is kind of amazing. It's like, I read a book once years ago that had this notion in it that, you know, it had some line, I can't remember exactly how it went, but it said, out of the darkness, light, out of the flightless flight, right? And so the idea is that, you know, you don't really know what light is until you've experienced darkness, and you don't know what flight is until you've been flightless, right? So really, in a way, this is kind of the darkness that if you reflect it, I think, if you go away from everything it tells you to do, then you might end up on the kind of the right path. So let's go right to the, I don't use this thing very often, so I set it down and lost track of it. So this is what I came across on my feed. Now I'm going to guess you guys can see that out there. I copied onto this black slide. Its background was black, which is why I went with the black slide thing. But it says up here, "Hello, I didn't mean to interrupt your scrolling, but I just wanted to ask, do you accept me? Jesus." Right? Yes. Like and share now. So there you have it, right? In all of its glory, this comes up on the face. Somebody posts this thing, and I'm instantly struck by the fact that almost every single part of it is messed up. I mean, there's almost no part of it that's worthwhile at all. It's astonishingly wrong. Like I said, it's so wrong that you can do almost the exact opposite thing of whatever it says, and you'll end up kind of in the right place. I mean, if we just take the first piece here, right? I didn't mean to interrupt your scrolling. So this is Jesus supposedly talking to us. I didn't mean to interrupt your scrolling. This is one of those kind of polite things that we might say to somebody, right? So, whoa, excuse me, sorry to interrupt. Well, but Jesus isn't sorry to interrupt, is he? Is he sorry to interrupt your scrolling? Really? Is that what he really means to say? I apologize for interrupting you. That would kind of make him a liar, wouldn't it? What does he expect you to do up here? So theoretically, this is all about you typing or being fooled into writing yes, and then boom, you're saved, right? It's like an accidental saved moment because you've accepted Jesus. It's like, oh, I got you. You hit accept. I'm kind of surprised they didn't have an accept button. Maybe they couldn't figure the widget out. But anyway, so it's all about kind of fooling you into becoming an accept Jesus into your heart Christian, right? Right? So Jesus theoretically here is saying, I didn't mean to interrupt your scrolling. But he does mean to interrupt your scrolling because he wants you to become a Christian. It's just that he's polite about it. And he also doesn't want you to think it's going to take too much time, right? So he's balancing your sense of propriety against your sense of being inconvenienced, which is kind of something that we do when we have, you know, it's kind of a pretty common sales tactic. I get these calls at work from people that want to sell me magazines. And they always start now, about 3 years ago, they always start with, I just want to confirm your address, sir. Right? So it's trying to get me to think, well, you know, it's such a pain to tell this person no and hang up on them. Maybe this will only take 30 seconds. So, okay. Right? They're trying to balance the oh, I really don't want to do this with the, okay, I'll just go ahead and do it. Right? So that's what Jesus is doing here. He's trying to make a sale. He says he just wants to get your address down, right? So I didn't mean to interrupt your scrolling. Just going to take a second. Okay. You know, one of the titles I went through on this lesson was The Little Picture, as opposed to our big picture thing. I did that because I thought you guys would appreciate that. I didn't go with that because it seemed really snarky. But the reason why I wanted to say that is because this is the easy believer. This is the I don't know if you've heard the term moralistic therapeutic deism. This is the religion of the ages version of the big picture, right? So it's you know, this is all you have to do. It's in a tiny capsule. It's only gonna take a second. Push the yes button. Saved. Right, so it's just so messed up this way. But originally I only had this one slide in my deck, and I realized I couldn't make you just sit there with this thing staring you in the face while I tried to talk to you, because then you'd be staring at this, and it's putting out so much wrongness that I decided to actually cut some more slides, and so I'm gonna parse this thing out piece by piece. Right, we're gonna go through this thing, and I wanted to really talk through it in chunks. Now, the thing that occurred to me when I cut these slides was also coming from one of our recent big pictures classes. I think this was the one before last. We sat down on a Saturday morning and we went off into pairs. And we were supposed to kind of try out one of our, you know, get started with the big picture. So we assume that the other person there is our prospect, right? And we're talking to them, and we're going to ask them questions like, when were you saved, right? And were you ever baptized? Just like Brent talked to us. Well, I got paired off with Nancy, and Nancy basically looks at me, and she gets that little Nancy smirk going, and she says, I'm going to be, because I said, hey, you want me to be the one that gives you all sorts of grief? She says, no, I'm going to do that. I was like, okay. And she says to me, I'm going to tell you, can I tell this story, Nancy? At least part of it? Okay. So she says, I actually didn't ask her before. And so she says to me, I'm going to tell you my salvation story, what really happened, right? And so I say to her, okay, I'm ready. I say, well, were you ever baptized? Well, yes, I was, you know. And I said, well, when were you? We talked about when you were saved. Well, I was saved when I was baptized. And I have to admit, that threw me for a loop. I thought, what's she trying to do here? That's not in the script, right? You're supposed to say, no, that didn't save me. So we had a good discussion, right? But one of the things, after a bit of discussing this, she says, I was really frustrated sometimes when I would go to the Church of Christ, because I thought to myself, I want to just hear about Jesus, right? Why are they telling me all about this thing Paul talked about? And, you know, this was really early on, right? And I thought, a lot of people are like this. So what I'm going to do here is, except for the last verse that I throw up, it's all going to be from Jesus' own words, okay? All the passages we're going to talk about are from Jesus, okay? Because I presume that maybe a person who would write the thing like this on Facebook might say, well, you know, they might be one of those people, I'm not really interested so much in that Paul guy. And he's got all that confusing stuff to write, but what did Jesus say? And really what they want is they want the hippie Jesus, right? Because that's the kind of Jesus that they've got. The Jesus that's just good. He's got the long hair and the Birkenstocks and the toga thing. And it's all easy and good, man. Just do whatever you're going to do. You know, that's really the kind of Jesus they want. But we'll take the Jesus from the Gospels, from the Jesus that's actually in the book, and we'll talk about the kind of things that he said. So I cut this part here and I said, hello, I didn't mean to interrupt your school, but I just wanted to ask, and so I'm asking, is this the voice of Jesus? This is my question. Is this really Jesus talking? This person, this person who signed in a nice cursive script, is this Jesus, right? He signed Jesus, Jesus, right? So is this the voice of Jesus? So we go to Luke chapter 14. Up there on the screen, we have 20 verses 26 through 27. If anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. So that doesn't sound like, just going to take a second. I didn't want to interrupt your scrolling. You know, I had in my mind also that, you know, one of my discarded titles was the faint knocker, right? And this is based on the fact that, you know, behold, I stand at the door and knock. And I had this view of, have you ever gone out to somebody's door and you didn't want them to be there? Have you ever done this? And you're like, just this very slight knock. Oh, they're not home. Let's go. Right? And it's like, that's like Jesus, right? And the Jesus on the front page is like, he's like, excuse me? Anybody? Oh, it's time to go to the next house. Right? Which, because he doesn't, he's not really interested in you. That's the other thing, right? See, the fascinating thing about the Jesus who says, I didn't mean to interrupt your scrolling, is that maybe he's serious, and he doesn't mean to interrupt your scrolling. He's not interested in you. He's not interested in you as a person at all, right? He just wants to make his sale. You're just a notch in the Facebook post, okay? So, but this Jesus, the Jesus who said that you must hate your own father, mother, wife, children, brothers, sisters, and even your own life, or you can't be his disciple. This is not the Jesus that says, excuse me, I hate to interrupt your scrolling. Do you accept me? Okay, I'm done. You don't have to do anything else again. Bye. You'll never hear from me. Right? You gave me my $5. I'm going to the next house or whatever. I'm running away. You signed on the little thing or whatever it is that I wanted you to do. The rest of that passage, I didn't put it all in here because I'm not a PowerPoint person that much, and if I try to cram this whole verse in here, it would have cluttered the slide up. But really, the whole passage here, it says, now great crowds accompanied him. Okay, so Jesus has this habit. He does this several times, right? He does it in John. We talked about one time I preached a sermon on the fact that after he feeds the people, then they're all following around, and he tells them, you only followed me because you wanted food, right? Which is true, because that's the way humans are. And they're like, yeah, well, why don't you show us a sign? Like some more food, maybe. And so he's like, no, I'm not going to do that anymore, right? You got fed once, but now you need to find true bread. And they're like, well, where is that? Give us this bread. Sounds good. And they're like, bread. And then he says to them, well, okay, I'm the bread. Eat me. And then drink my blood. And they're like, well, that's really gross. Because that's not what they're thinking about at all, right? And that's not what he's talking about. But he does. So he has this habit of when the crowds are following him, he tends to winnow them, right, with what he's teaching about. So it says here, now great crowds accompanied him. This is starting in verse 25 of Luke 14. And he turned and said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother, wife, children, brothers, sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Now, in just a minute, we're going to sing the song, Are You Counting the Cost, right? So that is the flip side of a coin here. That's the cost being counted of, that song asks, are you counting the cost of if you don't become a Christian? And in a minute, we'll talk more about that. But this, in this passage, Jesus says, are you counting the cost of becoming a Christian? Okay? He says the opposite. He's not saying, excuse me, I didn't mean to bother you. He turns to the crowds behind him and he says, for which of you, desiring to build a tower, does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king going out to encounter another king in war will not sit down first and deliberate whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? And if not, while the other is yet a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks for terms of peace. So therefore, any one of you who does not renounce all that he has cannot be my disciple. Okay, so Jesus does what he does best. He sets the bar impossibly high here for some of these people, right? Because he wants them to understand certain facts. But the simple thing is that this Jesus, the Jesus who's actually talking in the real Bible where we get the name Jesus from, says, you have to count the cost of becoming my disciple. These crowds are following him. Presumably, they have already hit the accept button. They typed in yes with an exclamation point on their Facebook, right? They're in the crowd. They're following around. I don't know. Some of them maybe even given up little bits of thing. I don't know how far away from their home they trekked before they gave up and went back, the ones who weren't going to follow him permanently. But he looks at them and he says these things that will most likely drive any of them away who are not prepared to really change their lives, who are not prepared for the fact that he wants all of them. I asked Nick to read that passage that he read as the scripture reading just before the lesson, because it is, once again, one of those times when Jesus, somebody comes up and says, what do I have to do? And he says, well, you know, what's the law say? He says, oh, I kept all those. Hey, this is, so this is not somebody just typing yes into the Facebook post. This is somebody who's done quite a bit of stuff. And Jesus looks at him and says, you lack one thing. Go sell everything you have and come follow me. So he demands of him the very thing the man is most unwilling to yield. He doesn't demand of him something simple. He doesn't say, you've got this. I'm sorry to interrupt your scrolling. All right. When the guy says, I followed the law, he doesn't say, I'm not going to ask anything else of you. Run along. You're good. It's these other jerks that have to do more. Right? No, he doesn't say that. He continually demands more of those who follow him. Matthew 13:44-46. The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and covered up. Then in his joy, he goes and sells all that he has, and he buys that field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant in search of pearls, who on finding one pearl of great value, went and sold all that he had and bought it. The cost, counting the cost of the kingdom of heaven, when you come to the kingdom of heaven, it is worth everything you have and everything you are. And this thing doesn't present it that way. This thing that we had in the previous slide. It's a complete opposite. The kingdom that it represents is a kingdom that takes 25 seconds. If you're my daughters and you're really fast with the small phone thing, maybe 3 seconds of YES exclamation done. That's all the investment that kingdom calls of you. Boom, Christian. Right. The smallest possible thing, and you're done. You're finished. But not the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven is worth everything you are. Jesus basically wants everything that we are. When he talks about, when they ask him the trick question against taxes, right? What's his response there? It's not really a story about taxes in the end. And he says, give to Caesar what is Caesar and God what is God's. Where's the image of God imprinted? It's dependent upon you. So what Jesus wants is you. He wants all of you. He wants everything you are. He wants your entire life. He wants your entire existence. Okay? He's not asking for 35 seconds of time on Facebook. He's not asking for just a little tiny outlay of effort. When we sell the gospel that way, or when anybody sells any type of gospel that way, it becomes a false gospel. Because it ropes somebody into something that they think is very low effort, right? You know, the parable of the sower talks about plants that need to grow, and then what we're kind of doing if we do too short a sell on this person, if we say, oh, it's so simple, just do this simple thing, then they can't, there's no growth there. How will they grow? They didn't expect to change their life. That's not what they came to you for. They came to you for something simple. They didn't think they were sick in such a way that they required God as their physician. They could have gotten whatever you're giving them from the local drugstore, right? So it's all relative. Matthew 10:34-39. Do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a person's enemies will be those of his own household. Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Hi, I didn't mean to interrupt your scrolling, but I just wanted to ask. That is not the voice of Jesus. That is not the Jesus who says the things that we just read from the Gospels. The Jesus who basically says, you know, the one who loses their life for my sake will find it. The early church, of course, had to be constructed this way. We have such a luxury in this country now and in this place and in this time to believe and then not to have very much invested in it, right? And because there's nobody coming to our door demanding that we renounce Christ or be beheaded or have to fight wild beasts or be tortured to death in some other terrifying way, right? There's nobody doing that to us. Now, the first century church, talk about a commitment. If you wanted to be a Christian in the first century church, what were you going to come to? When they asked you, hey, I didn't mean to interrupt your daily meals here, guys. Do you want to become a Christian? What? We're about to go see those guys eating in the arena. I'm not going to go become a Christian, right? What kind of investment would that be? It'd have to be crazy to become a Christian with minimal effort in those days. People understood that you became a Christian, you might get killed for it. And that's the type of disciples that Christ wants and needs. That's the type of disciples that we must be for him. So, hello, I didn't mean to interrupt your scrolling, but I just want to ask, and I ask, is this the voice of Jesus? And my answer is no. It is not the voice of Jesus. So now to the next piece here. Do you accept me, Jesus? So who are you accepting? We've already decided that this is not the voice of Jesus. This person, this entity who signed their nice name in script here is not Jesus. So who is this? Who is this thing, this person, this entity? Who is talking to us in this post? You know, it's common to, back when I was in college, we got to be blunt with these things. You got to be honest with yourself. When I was in college, Saturday Night Live had a fellow on that most of you should remember, Dana Carvey. He eventually, you know, his career tanked and went downhill, and you never hear much about him anymore, although he's this famous comedian, right? And he had a character on Saturday Night Live, and the character was called the Church Lady. And I'm bringing this up uncomfortably because, of course, you knew that I was going to bring up the devil here. I mean, I would hope that you would realize that's where I was going. And so I'm going to confront here full on. I want to confront the concept of the Church Lady. Now, what did the Church Lady do? The Church Lady shtick was pretty simple. Now, Carvey was a master at voices and of impersonations, so he could make it pretty funny, okay? But he would go, oh, now, isn't that special? You know, and where did that come from? Could it be Satan? Right? And it was a big joke, right? Could it be Satan? Oh, how funny that was, right? That who could suggest that was Satan? What a silly, nonsensical concept, right? That the devil even exists is just ridiculous. Okay, people are worried about God, but they'd already decided that the devil was just a sort of mythological nicety that was kind of silly and ended up in movies, usually as a good guy, strangely enough. But not real, okay? My suggestion to you is that the same person, the same being, the same personality in the garden that said, did God actually say that you couldn't eat from any tree in the whole garden? And then Eve says, oh no, we can eat from everything we want, we just can't eat from that one or we'll die. You will not die. My point is that same person is the person who signed this. My point to you is that this here is the devil. This concept is the devil. 2 Corinthians 11:14 says, even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. John 8, 30, 43 through 44, Jesus says, "Why do you not understand what I say?" So he's talking now to the Jews, right? And they weren't cognating what he said, and they're having more and more arguments, and it keeps escalating and escalating. The Jews are like, "Who are you? Have you gone completely bonkers?" They eventually asked him, "Do you have a demon?" Right? And so he says, "Why don't you understand what I'm telling you? It is because you cannot bear to hear my word. You are of your father the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies." The devil is not ever going to be nice enough to show up with his pitch, with his tail and his cloven hoofs showing to you. That's not how he works. He works in things like this. This is his power. To leverage the fact that a great country like America, with all of its materialistic wealth, realizes that in the words of the writer of Proverbs, it doesn't have any need for God. It's not so poor that it has to steal. In fact, it's so rich that it doesn't even feel a need for God. And so in order to make Christians out of people in America, you have to make it worth such a tiny amount of effort that they can barely be bothered to reach their fingers out and type Y-E-S. And this is so irritating. But you know, their friend asked them to do it and hit the enter button, and now they're Christians. And that's about all they can be expected to do. And that's because the devil is behind that, not Jesus. Matthew 24, 4 through 5. "And Jesus answered them, 'See that no one leads you astray, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and they will lead many astray.'" Now, this is all of that discourse. I'm not trying to say, and I'm going to have to disclaim this thing, right? Somebody will say, no, it's about talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. What I'm using it as is the fact that I think throughout all of time, people have always come, and they've always said, I'm Jesus. Jesus is here. Jesus is there. Now, some of them are the more obvious types. You got the cult leaders like the Jim Joneses who say, "Yes, I'm Jesus," and David Koresh who said, "Yes, I'm Jesus." The Branch Davidians, named after David Koresh, because he said he was Jesus, right? So these people are now, "I'm Jesus." And so you people like that, and we saw, "Oh, that guy's pretty evil." Why? Because there you can kind of see a little bit of the cloven hoof, right? And it's a little bit gross to those of us who are normal. Okay, but really the fact is that he's a lot more subtle than that, and he's all over the place. And he's right there in front of this person who posted this with this very simple thing. "Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your scrolling." Oh, see how nice he is? "But do you accept me?" "Oh, yes, you do." "Great. And you're done. You're saved. You're saved. Go on. Never ask a question again. If you had to do anything else, it's a work. And works don't save you. So you tell all those people who tell you to do anything else that they are the ones who are lost, and that they should not judge, and that they're the ones who are making works. And you make sure that you run along and just live your life the way you always lived it before, with no change at all. Why? Because there's nothing else necessary for you to be saved." This is the last I said I would keep. Everything else, as I've said before, is all the words of Christ. Well, no, wait a minute, sorry, I dropped one in there, I lied. The 2 Corinthians passage I forgot about, I dropped in there. So you're right. This is Paul. But this is also Paul, right? Galatians 1, 8 through 9. "But even if we or an angel from heaven should preach to you a gospel contrary to the one we preached to you, let him be accursed. As we have said before, so now I say again, if anyone is preaching to you a gospel contrary to the one you received, let him be accursed." Now, I will tell you that all these things are of the same type. We see in front of us now that there's a lot of places in our society that we say, look at this great evil, look at that great evil. And after the rulings that come out in the last few weeks, every person of good conscience probably says, wow, what fantastic evil that we are descending into. But I'm here to tell you that this is in many ways worse than all of that. This is the reason why that is happening. This is the reason why people are being given over, why the nation is being handed over to its base desires, because it believes that all it has to do is just write accept, yes, on a Facebook page, because that's all it thinks is necessary, because that's what it thinks the gospel is. And it's got a false gospel, and it's not a real gospel. And because it's a false gospel, and because it's the devil, essentially it's being fed over, it's being allowed, God allows people to go over to where they are tugging to go to. You ever see some little kid in the store, he's pulling away. I want this, right? God eventually lets go. Poof, flat on your face. right? As you pull away towards what it is you think you want. The sin that is entangling you. Do you want that? Look around you. That's what the nation's being allowed to do. It's being allowed to pull away. And God is saying, that's what you want. Have you counted the cost? We're going to sing in just a moment the song, Have You Counted the Cost? Now, before, in the early part of the lesson, I read the passage from Christ where he says, you don't come to the kingdom unless you've counted the cost. He says, a man does not go to war. Okay, a king does not go to war against another king unless he knows he can win, or unless he thinks he can win. He's counted that cost. So he doesn't build a tower unless he thinks he's got the materials on hand. He counts the cost. We do the same thing today. It's a human thing, right? If you go and you're going to buy a house, you better count the cost. You don't walk in with nothing, okay, and then get upset when you don't have enough. Okay, you don't. If you are going to run a marathon, all right, you better start getting ready for it. Right, it's a big outlay of energy. It's going to hurt you at mile 12, at mile 13. You're going to be in pain. Do you sit on the couch until the day before the marathon and eat Pringles all the time, and then you show up at the marathon and you puke at mile one, right, and then you get upset? No, everybody knows that you count the cost. So what type of cost are you counting when you are being asked to come to the kingdom? Well, there's a carrot and there's a stick, right? So believe it or not, the song that we're about to sing is, have you counted the cost of not being a Christian? Well, that cost is pretty high. The person who's not a Christian, right, is lost. So this person who just does the accept button, that's a lost person. Okay? A person who followed the wrong gospel. Now, I want to ask you. I'm going to tell you this. I don't expect anybody to respond to this invitation. Because the invitation I'm going to give is not an invitation that says, hey, come on up. Baptism's really simple. It is. It is really simple. We have water ready behind this screen. Trust us, it's there. But that's not the invitation I want to end with tonight. What I want to end with is this. If you're going to come forward now, it better be because you counted the cost of your entire life being handed over to Christ. I'm not asking you to hit yes on a Facebook post. That's not the invitation tonight. The invitation tonight is, are you ready to give everything you have to God? And like I said, I don't expect any takers. I expect anybody here to think, I don't want to do that. Wow, that's crazy. I'm going to sit right here. I'm not going to give it to you easy and free. A time is coming in this nation, I believe shortly, where we will be under persecution. It's probably time that we decide that no longer is it okay for us to have easy believism and for us to just kind of dwell in our materialistic happiness. Right? The people who come to Christ now have to understand that there's a possibility that you'll be undergoing more violence, more pain and suffering than those of the rest of us, right, who grew up in a relatively peaceful time. If you come to God now, who knows what it could mean for you? Now, I'm still asking you to come, but I'm saying that count the cost. Count the cost. If you need to come to Jesus, I'm going to beg and plead with you. You should come. I would love to see somebody come forward after an invitation like this. You would know, I think, that, I mean, I would feel like that's a person, a real Christian, right? They want to give their life to God, and they want to give it all to God. And when they're baptized, they know that it's not come out of the water and do the same thing you always ever did. It's changed permanently. So if you need to come forward, and you need to be baptized, and you want to repent, and you want to give your entire life to Christ, then would you do that now as we stand and sing the song that's been selected?
And you hurry along with the pleasure-mad throng. Have you counted? Have you counted?